the human temple, the spine is that sacred place, the altar. It's a point of focus within your own body. As you watch, the important thing to do is not to analyze, just watch. That's why Jesus said, when the eyes are single, or when the eyes are focused internally, the whole body is full of light. It's a fact that you can validate for yourself. Cells are made up of atoms. And the light is shining in the darkness. The atomic light of your cells are already illuminating the boundary lines of the cells, which we call darkness. And the darkness comprehends it not, that is, the boundary lines cannot analyze the light. But let your light so shine, that is, keep watching it. It's already shining, you don't have to turn it on. It's already turned on in you. All you have to do is to watch. Let your light so shine before men. That is, your friends around you, the world around you. That they may see the good works. That is, the time you spent to look inside of your cellular structure, so that the health, which is life, which is radiance, which is vitality, which is synchronicity, which is divinity, which is immunity, begins to permeate your body in the form of joyousness. That radiance can be seen externally in your body as evidence that you spent a great deal of time, or we say the good works, in keeping the body in a sense of focus or balance. It is very obvious. It is not something you can hide. It glows of its own accord. No one can give you the light. The light is already in you. Another human being can only direct you to where it is. You have to master it yourself. You have to become unified with it. That's your option. It is like turning the key over to you to let you drive your own car. If you've been a passenger all your life, about where you are in your head, at this moment in time, you're behind the wheel. Nobody can drive it for you. No one can watch for you inside of your head. You have to watch for yourself. That's why it's called God's witness or Jehovah's witness. Consciousness is watching its own unfoldment, its own evolution, its own realization. But if you analyze it, you put the brakes on it, if you watch, you have a beautiful journey waiting for you. All you gotta do is steer the wheel. The more you watch inside, the more you live in the present. The all now. The creative I am. When you analyze, you drift. Between past and possible future. Past cannot come back to live again, and future can't be lived, because we only live now. very thankful to be back again. Gosh, I remember the first time I came in this house, just three of us. Wow. Either the tree grew or the leaves multiply. But it's wonderful to see so many beautiful faces. For those who don't understand some of the words that they use, like satsang, let's clarify it. I know it's a very oriental word, and a lot of interpretations for it. But when you get down into the actual mechanics of what it represents, it goes deeper than what is interpreted. Eastern people use the word sat to mean existence, and sang or sang as fellowship. And so they jumble the two things together and call it fellowship with truth. And leave it there hanging in your consciousness. But it goes beyond philosophy. It goes beyond psychology. It goes down into the nitty-gritty of the atomic physics. Existence is already here. You are here. You're not wishing to be here. Your atomic body is right here. All 144 elements that comprise the universe is in each one of us. We have to come to grips with it on a conscious level for our own conscious evolution and conscious transformation. That's why they call it fellowship, the involvement of your own actual existence. So it goes beyond mere philosophy and mere psychology, because we're living now and we have aches and pains and needs and frustrations and doubts. And if we can't confront those conditions at the actual level, we don't have anything to build on. So it has nothing to do with a belief anymore. It has to do with what you do with your own potential and how you come to grips with your potential and how you are structured out. It's taking a long time for modern man to come to grips with this structure, though it's been pointed in that direction. Seek the truth. The truth is within you. It'll make you free, free man or lord of yourself. And it's left hanging in the air. And periodically we have examples of individuals who exemplify this atomic physics, but make them stand out as unique people. And we pay a great deal of reverence and love to them. Yet, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, how do you experience it? That's more important. How do you experience it? It's all right to hear somebody talk of it, but I talking of apple pie ain't gonna satisfy your stomach if it's empty. You gotta put it inside your mug and find it if it's too much cinnamon.
mushroom with sugar or they're cooking up, right? And that's exactly what a satsang is. A satsang is a direct confrontation with your own physics. That's why the man Jesus said, when two or three have gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. He wasn't talking of nebulous association. He's talking of actual direct association with the body and people around you. And in my name, that's a very, very nebulous statement until you come to grip with the actual physics of it. Name is a label and requires sonics to exemplify it. So if I ask you, what is your name? You can't do like that with your hands. You'll have to say something, or if you can't speak, then you'll use sign language, trying to indicate to me on a level of subtle sonics, so I understand what your name is. So even the subtle sonics is involved, let alone the audible sonics. So gathering in my name, physically, you're involved with two ranges of the sonics, the audible range and the inaudible range. And you have to integrate it, like hooking two cables and turning over the engine. It's like your car stall out there, ain't going no place, and you're trying to thumb a ride, and somebody comes along and bump you with the jumper cable, and you start up all over again. That's what satsanga is. It's the same actual physics. The locking in of your physiology with the environmental sonics in reference to the life form that gave utterance to that sonics and would be responsible for that utterance. In other words, Eveready battery produced by Eveready will be backed up by Eveready. Right? So we have something factual to work with, not nebulous or guessing anymore. The actual science can be experienced, integrated into your cellular structure, and that which you call holistic health or realization or divine quality begins to manifest. In modern technology, we call it biological timing. God is that cosmic timing that appears to put everything in balance in your life. And you walk and live in that mind, timing. I live and move in his being. You live and move in biological timing. It makes more sense to you because now you can actually live it without fear or without guilt. And it's not a nebulous nonentity. It's an actuality that begins to permeate you moment to moment. You can't seem to shake it off. It seems to pull you together for the first time and put your life in order. And it's nothing to be afraid of. Because all the great teachers tell us, all you have to say to this invisible force, I'm stupid, but where do I go from here? It's like your own son come and tell you, Dad, I broke the car, what do I do next? Okay, son, let's fix it. So the feeling of guilt and the remorse isn't necessary
like years ago to prod us on to accept our reality. The conscious love of knowing ourselves is the real prod that has to be generated from inside of us. A conscious love to know our structure, to relate with this love. And that's what the fellowship is, that why you're here. You're not here because of guilt. You're here because of a conscious love, a reaching out from the heart, a warmth, an exchange that builds health. That conscious love is what you want to incorporate moment to moment. Let it take over and work on the cells. You'll only feel it as a form of tingling, but don't discredit it or don't play it for anything less. It's too fantastic. That tingling is an indication, like the cable between the two batteries, that something is passing. But you can't hook up two batteries and don't turn on the engine. It'll drain off one, right? So you have to have one engine turned up and sending the charge to the other battery till the other battery is able to turn over with its own engine and go. And that's basically the physics behind satsang. An interconnectedness at the atomic physics. The car that comes along that is capable of giving you a boost to get you going, it's not a superior car. It's just that it happened to be there at the moment of your need. Hundreds of cars can pass. How many would stop? The one that stops is the one that gives you the boost, right? And that's exactly what we are to each other. When we relate or understand what's going on, we are all boosters to individuals who need the boost. So I'm not greater than you, nor are you lesser than me. As Jesus says, it's enough that we be friends. That's more important, that we can give each other a cosmic boost of charge to that inward love. It's really a charge of love, more so than a personalized love, where you localize it to your family. It's a love that takes in all life. So it expands the heart more for you. You begin to see aspects of yourself in this love all around you. So when we come together in the term satsang, we are really coming together at the atomic physics to give the cellular structure a booster charge of the inner love between creation and creator. The car that gives you the boost is just as helpless if its engine isn't working, and if its battery isn't working. So you see, there's a certain quality in one car over the other, that is, one is running and working and the other one is only stalled. So that's my great man Jesus said, suffer it to be so, for this is the way of righteousness, or none come unto the Father but by me. He's atomically saying,
we really can't activate our own dead battery. Sorry to be so, you gotta get up and thump somebody along or reach out and need to, so that they will at least stop and give you a boost. See, for that reason, it makes us more human. And the suffering is not really a painful suffering, is the fact that it makes you appreciate that you're not alone in the universe. The end result is still a high form of health, a health that transcends the normal healing of conditions of the body. It's a type of health that raises your level of immunity. And it gives you a different kind of peace that we are all seeming to look for, but don't understand what we're really looking for. Jesus said, "The peace I give, the world don't give." The world gives you 6 feet under the ground, and may you rest in peace. It's a form of sedation, because it's total withdrawal from the source of life or the flow of life. And realize people can't offer you that. As long as they're in the bodies, it would be highly impractical to offer a person that. That's why they say, "My God is the God of the living and not of the dead." They can only offer you the strength of peace, not the peace of peace. That's a different kind of peace. They offer you another boost to your own battery to get up and go again, to cope with life. Just as much as that car will drive off and leave you and your car is turning over to go and do your business, right? But they won't go away until you're able to turn over your own engine and move, right? And that's exactly what we're talking about. That kind of inward connectedness. And so fellowship with truth is a kind of interconnectedness that is going on between all life forms to help us to realize that there's a deep concern in life itself. The creative intelligence itself, that deep concern is love, for it to continue to be. If it was not there, it would just phase off and we'll all go our own way to fade out. But somewhere in the whole process, this deep concern comes in and pulls us together. Earlier I said that most of us can be a passenger in the car and never get behind the wheel. And when we do get behind the wheel, it doesn't say if we know to drive. That's a part also that needs to be cleared up in the human being, where they're going. We come into this world like passengers. Everything is done for us. And we have a craving to be responsible. That means we would like to learn to drive the car. We would like to learn to be responsible for this mechanism. Take care of it. After many bumps. But if we don't learn how to drive it, we you can't be trusted with the key. You're gonna create a lot of accidents. So learning to drive the car is nature's way to educate us through pain. She doesn't have any other way to teach us. Even when you go to learn to drive a car, the chances are you may bump the fender back in and turn hard and scratch up a lot of things till you get what the feel of the vehicle. Then you're competent behind the wheel. That's the same way with consciousness, trying to relate to the creative intelligence. We have to go through frustrations, a lot of disappointments, and finally we get a sense of focus that we can stick it up. Somehow this strength of sticking it out seems to develop in us or emerge in us. And the first time we say something to ourselves and go through the motions of making it work and sticking it out till it's all complete, this strength appears for the first time. It's a form of healing to the mechanism. You're turning on your immunity consciously for the first time. Well, you may not know that because no one comes along to tell you about it. And you couldn't be ready for the explanation because you were too busy trying to pursue your own desires. You have to live a certain amount of years and then go through an inward evaluation to come to that type of readiness. That's why the Eastern people say when the student is ready, the master will be there. Years ago, when Yogananda was alive, I wrote him a letter and I asked him, he says, "Sir, what constitutes readiness of a student?" And he wrote back on a piece of paper, not an inch of the paper was empty. One word he wrote all over the whole page, back and front, and the word was frustration. When you're totally frustrated, then you're ready for a master. Not a master, but for masterhood. That means your sense of questioning is suspended for the first moment, and the sense of listening to yourself begins to increase. And so he directed me back to look inside of my own head and don't try to analyze. Quit the analysis. Not that the analysis is bad or you're not going to use it, but for the time being, would be like the guy who is stalled, along comes the other one, and he's busy arguing how to hook it up, you know, between the two vehicles, analyzing the cables. So that's exactly the same situation as it goes on. Then I slow down my brain and just watch inside and began to listen instead of trying to analyze what was going on my biological structure. The internal embodiment of spirit, which is the creative life, began to emerge through the cells. The atomic physics began to open up. And I realized that we don't have. The comprehension by analyzing it, we get the comprehension by living it. We have to go through the conflicts that come up day by day and work it out through our emotional levels, our intellectual levels, and our physical levels, then the comprehension begins to emerge. Paul will call that the fruit of the Spirit, understanding. Yet the gifts of the Spirit came, and those are the ability to read the mind, and psychic phenomena, and so forth. They're all a part of your nature. Don't discredit them, or don't think they're to be overly emphasized. They're what you call a byproduct. The most important thing is the understanding of what it's doing for you. Everyone is entitled to the gifts of the Spirit, but it takes a long time to extract the, I call the oil out of the nut. Yeah, there's a big nut, a lot of ideas in there, but to extract that understanding of how it, you gotta go through a lot of internal conflicts first. It's easy to get the gifts to come up to work for you. Some people take a bit longer, but they work. But understanding is far more a deeper growth, and that takes time. In the understanding, the real health emerges for the first time. And that's what's so unique about it. That within this very structure, the physics of cellular transformation and transmutation and non-decomposition, like a butterfly existing in a caterpillar, it's not a figment of your imagination. It happens in the caterpillar. So you and I carry it. We can delay the process, but we can't prevent it from happening. Each one of us carry that in the mechanism. It's the creative principle. This is his embodiment of us. And to him that overcometh our nuts and port a second time is the challenge, the real testing of ourselves. And he tests us in the most difficult thing that we cherish, that's our health. Possessions can come and go, loved ones can come and go, but health, when it's gone, it's gone. That's the most challenging test in terms of your mechanism. But if you take the words of the great teachers, and they are committed to their words, I'm only reminding you that the battery manufacturer is committed to his product, so you have something to fall back on. If you lose your life for my sake, you will have it back. Big Brother Jesus said that, you know. So you can hold up to the warranty. That's very true, because he'll be behind his words. He won't let you down. All great teachers are behind their words, because that's their whole role in life. It is God in them that makes a statement, really, when they have realized their godness. That's why he said, as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even those that believe on his name. You have that guarantee locked up in you, and it's declared by the living body.
So it's imprinted in the cosmic atoms. It can't go away. It's just it takes us time to wake up to it. And wake up to what we have waiting for us. And I don't say it's an overnight process. I wouldn't promise you that. Each one of us is working through his own particular time lapse. The Eastern men call that the scope of Ihara, the horoscope. So three wise men went to see Jesus, you know, that they were astrologers and kings at the same time. So that's basically where we all come in at different periods of time with our own particular karmic indebtedness to work out. That's our invoice commitment. In other words, each one of us, the lifestyle is their own blueprint, is your own blueprint. You have to work through that blueprint to your divinity. A Sagittarian has his to work out, a Scorpio has his to work out, a Taurus has his to work out, whatever it is. But out of the basic 12 blueprints, each one works out his own divinity. So you begin to realize that everyone around us is unique because they're all working on their own destiny through that particular blueprint that they have to work with. When we drive in the car and we wish to get behind the wheel, we have three conditions. Learning to drive first, so you can be a responsible individual behind the wheel. And after we know to drive, we can go to work and earn the money to buy the car. And then we can walk up to the salesman and make the arrangements for the responsibility of the car in your name, get the key and get behind the wheel and pick up the map and go down the road. That's exactly the same with our own creative structure. Driving the car or learning to drive the car is recognizing the ups and downs and the frustrations in your life. And the salesman who has the key is the teacher who will give it to you when you're frustrated. And what he's giving you primarily is what they call initiation or introduction to the inward light and the sense of direction of how to focus yourself. And then so the joy of driving is the unfoldment and this unfoldment is not an overnight process. It is moment to moment. And you know, when you drive a car, you have to have gas in the tank. Otherwise, it's not going any place if it's empty. Equally true, this bodily car isn't going to go any place if you don't breathe.
nostril is the tank, and the creator is the gasoline. As long as you have gasoline to keep the tank going, you can drive a long way through the universe. So the whole universe is awaiting consciousness. Not too long ago, I see they did some research, and the research is that we can travel in time. Time travel. They're proving more and more that we can transcend the limitations of the five senses, the limitations of what we call concave vision, that is vision where you look at, and convex vision is where you look through. Some of us have the capacity to see through quicker than others. That doesn't say that no one doesn't have the capacity. Everyone has the capacity to see through to the atomic source. But not all of us are ready to see through. The frustrations and the aggravations and the sense of timing limits that capacity to see through to the atomic structure. And as soon as we clean up the body, the sense of timing comes back. The frustrations are reduced, and consciousness begins to see through. Matter becomes transparent. So they say you're clairvoyant. There are techniques or exercises to develop it too, but it's already part of our natural process. The more we study the structure and its laws and dynamics, the more we realize that God realization or transformation of the consciousness over the body is an actuality. And it's not a nebulous process. It's very, very factual and very practical. The Eastern approach began with a simple method by looking inwards, closing the eyes. And arrive at certain actual experiences and transformations. And over the centuries, we've come this far into today's society where evidence of that internal knowledge can be measured by equipment. So, in combining both, we have made a greater jump in shortening the time, and more people can experience their own internal reality. The getting together in silence in a group is valid.
and in your own home, in private, also is valid. And the process has nothing to do with any actual location. Like years ago, the temples or ashrams were considered a place to go to pursue the process. What we've come to realize is that those places were used as a means to act as a form of therapy or clinic for many who couldn't function rationally in their environment and had to go to these areas to be instructed how to look to their own internal mechanism for their health again. And with the advent of modern science, we've come a long way to where we can actually validate many of the experiences. And it doesn't have to do with being away from society anymore. In the home, with the family, with your friends, the ongoing process is the greatest discovery, because you're living in the now and you can bring this particular inward experience to the surface quick. Because you can evaluate and the results and realize that the results are practical and they are measurable and they have a uplifting value, not only for yourself but for others. That's why when the man Jesus said, when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. He was the first one to give the group association its first boost over the individual personal practice. That doesn't say the individual personal practice is not necessary. It is necessary. We need both. We need to be by ourselves at times, and we need to relate with others. It's a sort of overflow. It balances us. You can be too withdrawn and they call you an introvert. You can be too outward and they can call you an extrovert. But if you have the balance, you can function properly. And that's more healthy, to have the balance between the inward and the outer. To use both. Your own discoveries are your own personal evidence that each one of us is unique. And there is no room for feeling left out, because your horoscope is not his horoscope or her horoscope. So you can't go at their speed. You gotta go at your own speed in the unfoldment. The Eastern people used to call it karma. Now we can narrow it down to the actual invoice of the life form when it came in into this manifestation to live out the interplay of the polarity of the body. Somebody once asked me if a horoscope is detrimental information, because a lot of things concerning it
always show up that you're gonna have this bad and this condition waiting for you. And I said, as far as I know from horoscopes, all horoscopes are break even. It's half and half, but the funny part of a horoscope is that there's no sequential cancellation. It's random cancellation. But they cancel each other. In other words, if you had 1 to 100 and divided in half, and it'd be 50-50, and you were to write 1 to 50, and then from 50 to 100, there'll be sequential cancellation, right? So 1 will match 50, 2 will match 51, see what I mean? 3 will match, that will be a sequential cancellation, because they'll be opposite to cancel each other. But not so in a horoscope. A horoscope is a random cancellation of an equal function. So one may cancel 98. Two may cancel 65. You get what I mean? And three may cancel 70. So because they're so random, they come up to test you only for one reason, that you develop immunity. Now, immunity at its highest level of refinement is your divinity. If you were to say a person is divine, you can be carried away into a nebulous range of trying to define that person's quality. But if that person was to be practical about their divinity, you will see that they are capable of withstanding all conditions, and they have a very high immunity. The more spiritual you become, the more immune to the breakdown of the mechanism you become. See, that's the more divine. The more closer you get to God, the less all the problems are going to bother you, right? Now, then we want to know, what is spirituality? Can we find a functional description of it so that we can live with it and not feel left out or holier than thou? We find that spirituality is the practicality. The more spiritual you become, the more practical you become, and less impractical. Spirituality is not being overly religious. Overly religious can be fanatical. But a spiritual person is not overly religious. They're very, very practical. You may not even recognize them that they're spiritual. And a religious person can be very impractical too. Pretending they are religious and be very impractical and fanatical about their religiosity. But when you get to the real spiritual being who moves with the spirit, that person is very, very practical. So we have to clarify in our thinking the difference between being spiritual and being religiously involved and working towards a divine realization, what that also involves. Sometimes we can go away with the belief that we are holier than others and trying to be more holier than others, when in actuality that's not what really is going on inside of us. The more you become practical in your approach to life, the more the spirit is taking over.
the more the unification of nature is taking over. And as you raise that spirituality more and more, the sense of guilt leaves you, and the sense of weakness leaves you, and the sense of strength and unity begins to increase. So the ability to cope with a challenge as it presents itself moment to moment is evidence of your divinity unfolding. Instead of panicking or feeling lost and in a quandary, you begin to see this internal quality emerging for the first time. Then, wherever you are, your mere presence is vitalistic to the environment, very nourishing to the environment. It's like the person who stopped to give you a jump in your car and let you go your way. You become like that. Your own mechanism, your own self-worth flows as evidence. Thank you.
Would you like to take a break and then come back to some questions and answers? And I think it's Theo going to break, so you're probably
going to be around.
Okay.
If you have any questions you want to ask, prepare to answer. Then we'll have another little meditation. So, is there any questions you want to ask?
Could you describe what happens with cellular changes? I mean, what actually goes through the body and happens?
Well, the first thing that happens is the respiration begins to change. It's evidence that you're having a physical change going on in the body. The breathing slows down. Now, in some people, when the breathing slows down, if they're too toxic, it will refrigerate them. And therefore, the toxicity will stay longer in the body. If they're less toxic, then they don't have that problem. That's why the requirements in the ancient days was to clean up the body. They made the student clean the body and focus on the inward observation of the atomic process. Hence the statement, cleanliness is next to godliness. Today we find that the emphasis on that cleanliness is valid in the early stages of your development, because your own bodily toxins are going to come up and interfere with your focusing. Now, before you ever became conscious of this process or got involved in it, you wouldn't have gone looking for it if there wasn't some degree of toxicity already developing in your body, either physical, psychological, emotional, or spiritual. There's a certain degree of toxicity increasing. Then you come to a point where you know that you must do something to correct it.
And as soon as you get exposed to the meditative process, the emphasis again is on cleaning the body up. The body will refrigerate itself and retain acids, and it has to be cleaned up. Now, as you continue to practice the internal observation, the quantity of carbon dioxide is gradually released quicker. You know, life is oxygen. Death is carbon dioxide. Oxygen is the only gas that produces the phenomenon called consciousness. So, you go back to the early writings, they say God breathed into man breath of life, and man became living soul. From the actual operation of the body, dead people don't utilize oxygen. They're loaded up with carbon dioxide. Now, if you cut the umbilical cord from the baby, it has to have oxygen to live. The dilation and the constriction is the evidence of the apparent condition called consciousness. Under the microscope, before the cord is cut, the baby is not breathing through the nostrils. There's a flap right over here, and like that, fluids are passing in and out the mouth, but not through the nostrils. The lungs do not utilize oxygen. Now, when the baby comes out, and the cord is still connected, you can weigh that baby, and then when the cord is cut and it does breathe on its own, and you weigh that baby again, you'll find now the baby weighs 3.5 ounces more. Now, before a person is dying, you can weigh them. The moment they stop breathing and weigh them again, they're 3.5 ounces less. That oxygen plays a very important process in the dilation and constriction. And it's also responsible as a pressure to move the fluid in the structure, and responsible for the transportation of the minerals from the storage area to the point of demand, which you call the minerals or the chemistry. Now, if the point of demand doesn't receive those minerals on time, we have an imbalance. And if it doesn't hold when the cord is cut and the air is pressure into it, and it doesn't hold, the body will phase out, and then you have to bury it. It's refusing to hold. Now, when we measure the pressure and the delivery, we only end up with two conditions. Too much or too little. Then the healthy body is correct amount on time. A sick body, too much or too little on the time of delivery. Diseases then fall under two categories, or categories. Hyper, that means diseases are going too fast, the pressure is too fast. Or hypo, the pressure is too slow. Now, if it goes on time, you don't have a diseased body. You have a what?
Healthy.
A healthy body, but it's a timed body, like that car out there. Timed to run. And if it's not timed, it'll stay there till you time it. And that means the gas is going too fast through the carburetor or going too slow through the carburetor, right or wrong. Familiar? Good. So what you call health, in the actual sense, what you call God realization, in the actual sense of the word, where you have to come to grips with your mechanism and live with it moment to moment, is cellular timing. Now don't get carried away that the word cellular is materialistic, and that it's something mundane. It's not. It's the total creative process held together by this cosmic process. We are God manifested. We have arrived. We exist. We are trying to exist. Is that we don't accept our existence. We don't accept our godness in us yet. We don't know how to accept it because we don't know what direction to go to accept it. We have many information pointing the direction of how to recognize it. But some of that information, from the way it was handed down, tend to be partly factual and partly nebulous. There was no way to validate. Today, we can validate that information. The nebulous part created a condition for guilt. It created a condition for limitation of the organism and irresponsibility. Today, that nebulousness is removed with actual confrontation, actual experience, and no guilt. Responsibility is responsibility. Confrontation is confrontation. And the reality is that you can measure the experience. And the measurement is classified as truth or fact. So seek the truth or seek the fact, which is within you, which is how your structure is put together. And its righteousness means its right operation. Between input to output, between constriction and dilation, and it will free you. That means it removes the guilt and the nebulousness and the presuppositions and the fears and the anxieties and the panic and the sense of helplessness from the mechanism. Free men all. This freedom is a strength for the first time that you can cope with your confrontations. You have a sense of immunity building up to allow you to cope with it on a rational level without fear. And Lord means control of. You're in control, you're in balance, you're not hyper or hypo. You have a rational homeostasis, a balance. You're having an inner peace, an inner strength over the cellular structure. The meditation is a means to recognize, together with the research that is going on in our lab, that we're on the threshold of the most fantastic conscious transformation of the human being from his lack of understanding to his reservoir of understanding. And that reservoir gives him a sense of freedom and establishes his divinity without doubt, and his spirituality without impracticalness or fanatic behavior. So the gas oxygen is very important to understand, because we have to breathe it. Now, we breathe in oxygen. What do we breathe out? Carbon dioxide. So carbon dioxide at one level of our mechanism can be toxic if it stays in too long. It can refrigerate us and freeze up the mechanism, clog it up. Yet, at another level of acceleration, it establishes divinity. The very same thing that will kill you will preserve you. The non-decaying body of the saints or mystics is evidence of the regulated carbon dioxide and oxygen, just as much as the refrigerator will preserve meat from rotting by cooling it down. Equally true, this mechanism is designed to cool down and refrigerate and sustain an internal process of ongoing life without decomposition. More and more the researchers are showing that we carry an unusual process locked up in us. And the creative intelligence is not out in the sky, because somebody once said, "Adano, you say God is everywhere." And I said, "Yes." And then they look at me and said, "Well, if that is so, he's got to be in hell." I said, "Yes. He's his own hell. How can God be not in his own hell or heaven?" So Omar Khayyam came out and said, "I sent the soul out into this invisible, that's the space between the two hands, you can't see nothing. A letter or some kind of information of the afterlife, that means what happens when we die, the spell." And by, the soul came back and said, "I myself am heaven and hell." But let us look at it more objectively, apart from the poetry, apart from the philosophy. We can see something more dynamic about it, that is factual about it, and far more within the range of experience that raises our quality. I, this internal sonics, myself, how many you got? What makes up your skin? millions, right? Is a haven or a heaven? What is a heaven? Is it a storage place? What are we going to go to heaven to do that? The index catalog? Nobody ever asked yourself the question, what is a heaven? It's a storage place or some... What kind of place would it be? So we say to ourselves, it's a haven or a heaven. It's a place where everything will be in order. So it's an actual a storage. And a hell would be what? Something we have already prescribed to be a burning place for punishment. When we actually can see that the words really, a haven is a reservoir. And a hell is where you're fixed or held. To be in a factual sense of the physics, I, the Sonics, is its own haven and hell. It's locked up here. The clapping of two hands and the clapping of one hand is still Sonics. It ain't going any place. Never went any place. It was always here in the physics. But we never experienced it or realized it. That we are the crystallized sonics. In the beginning was the word. In the very onset, the sound. But by the same token, heat is coming out of that impact. Now if the eyes were fixed and not moving, you would start to see a blue glow around the skin. The amount of temperature generated by the impact of the two palms against each other. You may call it an aura for lack of understanding the physics behind it, since that was the name they gave it centuries ago. Today we know we don't have aura. But we do have biothermal radiation by the internal chemistry at different parts of the anatomy, slowed down by the carbon dioxide, by stress, by trauma, that glows. So different areas will appear to have different colors of the spectrum. And yet if you were to go and measure those areas, their temperature will vary. In a healthy area, it has one temperature, it has one particular color of the spectrum. In an unhealthy area, you have a different temperature and another color of the spectrum. And when we come into solar nutrition, we'll talk of the biological clock of the human body in reference to organic parts of the anatomy, and you'll see how they all interrelate, that you are your own heaven and hell. And the chemistry is already set. And so far, the 144 elements are there. They're 12 basic in a large quantity. Four gases, large quantity. And the rest are in minute trace quantity, but essential. None can be missing. They all have to be there to hold us together. We are a miniature universe. When it was written and spoken in philosophic language, it was propagated like that as a belief system. Today we can't take it as a belief system. We have to confront it as a living dynamics. What actually is going on in us? Who we are, what we are, why we are. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness. He didn't say, come, let me. Come, let us. That's plural, right? And then image and likeness, that's dual, not singular. We look around in physics today, we don't see any singular force. Every force that we can encounter has a polaristic movement. Even this electricity in here is polaristic. We are a polaristic organism. If we doubt it, and never saw one ovum made a human being, or one sperm make a human being. It takes two, right or wrong. And you can't have used ovums, so everybody's a virgin. That's a fact. And losers can be born, that's another fact. Only winners are born. So everybody here has arrived in their cosmic existence. You can make yourself a loser all your life by talking yourself into a nebulous state and the fears and the doubts and the worries. But if you look at your structure and understand it for what it is, and it's not a mundane thing, it's not new materialism. This is cosmic laws that put us together. This creative intelligence wants to be embodied in every form. That's why he's everywhere, he is everything. But we don't understand it because we have a sense of separateness. That's the stumbling block, the sense of separateness. But the sense of separateness exists only when the eyes are open. It diminishes when the eyes are closed. And if ever the oxygen refuses to come in when the eyes are closed, you will know for sure that the sense of separateness, it will not cease. You're totally unified. So when you go to sleep tonight, you don't have no guarantee you're going to wake up tomorrow, because you're breathing oxygen right now. You don't have no reserve oxygen waiting for you. And when you're sound asleep, do you know if you're a man or a woman? This is facts now, right? If you dream, then you're looking at something that is totally not cataloged properly in your brain. And whatever you make up of the dream or label with the dream, you can be totally erroneous as to its true origin or why it's caused to be there. Yet the chemistry will go on working. The oxygen will come in, the carbon dioxide will stay and go out. Now, early researchers observed this phenomenon of respiration, oxygen, carbon dioxide, and began to find ways and means to regulate this oxygenation. And in the regulation of the oxygenation, they discovered that it moves certain minerals to react in the mechanism to give it certain levels of behavior or response. And how that organism is programmed, these minerals will move to set up certain reactions. Today we are finding out that the crazy man isn't really crazy. There are certain imbalances in his chemistry. But where the imbalances are coming from, all that has been concluded so far, the person is hyper or hypo, which only tells us what that mineral is doing. It's either going too fast
are too slow in the organism. Now, when you take that individual and allow him to slow his brain down by meditation, and meditation is a very generalized word, until you get into the nitty-gritty of it, it means a lot more than what you think. The brain begins to regulate the breathing, because when you look in, you close your eyes, a sense of separateness begins to diminish. In the early stages of closing your eyes, the sense of separateness is an anguish. But because it's closely aligned with sleep,